Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Well, welcome to the beginning of our final round of topic for contemporary issues this year. Even though it feels like winter is back, this is like part of spring, right? Spring involves a couple of late frosts, and so hopefully all of your daffodils bounce back. Maybe I'll say that in a benediction. So, as part of our year-end business, I'm going to pass around little sheets of paper. These are official little sheets of paper for if there's a topic that you've been thinking, and I kind of wish we learned something about such and such, ant biology or something, I don't know. Feel free to write down a topic that you would be interested in. It can be really particular, like ant biology, or it can be really broad. Write that down if you're interested, hand it back to me, and that will help me plan something for next fall. So what we're going to talk about for these 4 weeks is global climate change, which I imagine you have heard something about. You can't hear much in the news without hearing something that that either directly addresses climate change or seems like it ought to have addressed climate change. And so I wanted to just sort of take a little time with that for these next 4 weeks, and just really sort of starting at the basics. So, you know, what do we really know about climate change? What is there to do? And today we're going to start with, why does this matter? So trying to think about this from the perspective of we are a church group, right? How does global climate change relate to our mission as this congregation? So I've brought in the experts. We're going to watch some TED Talks for these weeks. So TED Talks are like one of my favorite things. They're a format of talk. They have conferences just full of these things, which would just like melt your brain if you tried to sit down and listen to these over and over again and keep up with them. But they are like global experts in various fields coming to give a 20-minute presentation. So everything this expert knows on a particular topic in 20 minutes. So they go very fast, but the idea is that it's not like just sort of a condensed version of your book pitch or your funding pitch or whatever it is. You have to really sort of give us something that we wouldn't already have expected you to be saying. So, but they're great for giving like a really like tightly distilled presentation of an issue. So we're going to hear today from the former president of Ireland, Mary Robinson is her name. And she's going to give us the case for thinking about global climate change as a human rights issue. Global climate change as a human rights issue. I think this is applicable to us as Covenant in a fairly direct way because the way that we think about our mission is, you know, we think about feeding and we think about housing and we think about making sure that people are provided and cared for. And if President Robinson is right, which I think she makes a very compelling case here, if she's right, then global climate change works against our congregation's mission. So I'm going to start there. We're going to have, next week, we're going to have some conversation specifically about, hang on a second, what do we know, how do we know it? Because I know there's part of the thing with climate change as a larger conversation is the question of, is it even happening? Is it something that humans have caused? Sort of, you know, is there consensus about this? Short answer, yes. But that is consensus among actual, real, like evidence-based scientists. Yes, there is consensus about this. Longer answer, we need to talk about that, but I want to frame why this is important first. So I give you the former president of Ireland joining us live from 2015. Yes, I am actually, I'm going to make sure that I give you when certain things were said, because the science is advancing really fast around climate change and answering some of the objections that we may otherwise have to, well, what do we know? So what's important about 2015, when Mary Robinson is speaking, is that this is before the, I believe there was a climate conference in Rio, and then there was a big one in Paris. You'll remember the Paris Climate Accords of blessed memory. She's anticipating those. Obviously, the Paris Climate Accords have been reached, have been signed by the majority of countries in the world, minus ours. So just bear in mind kind of where she is as she's speaking. That'll also be important next week and the following weeks when we hear, okay, what do we know, what can we do? The science is really improving around some of the particulars of what we know. So this from 2015. So there's President Mary Robinson talking about climate change. She said not as an environmental issue sort of at its base level, right? She said she didn't get into this because she's a scientist or because she loves polar bears, although I'm sure she loves polar bears. But she said, this is, for me, a matter of justice around the world. She made reference to the climate crisis specifically as it faces the Republic of Kiribati. There is another TED Talk from later on in 2015 that has President Tong of the Republic of Kiribati actually being interviewed about kind of what are the plans and why are they making these plans. So a low-lying island nation in the Pacific having to decide, where will we be after global climate change and the rising of the sea levels that are even now visibly taking the land away and making the whole country really dangerously susceptible to storm surges particularly. There was a link to that in last Tuesday's Covenant Corner email. You're welcome to go back and see that. Or if you go onto the website, the Contemporary Issues upcoming topics, there's a link there to that talk as well. And to this one if you just want to hear this again. I don't have like a put together set of questions that I want to like walk you through here. I want to hear kind of what questions or comments arise in you as you're listening to President Robinson.
One thing I'm wondering, it sounded she sounded rather optimistic. Said changes are happening.
Yeah,
and they're happening rapidly.
Yeah.
But it's not enough. We need more.
Right.
Well, now it's 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened between then and now?
Right. Unfortunately, fairly little in terms of the actual pace of carbon emissions into the atmosphere. So the primary greenhouse gas that sort of creates the heat trapping capacity in the atmosphere is carbon dioxide. And there are several other gases that also contribute to this effect. Methane, for instance, is actually much more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon, but it is also it's also much shorter lived. So it's a huge impact, but it is less of an overall long term. Greenhouse gases are typically measured, sort of spoken of as carbon dioxide, or sort of a carbon dioxide equivalent. So you can take methane and sort of calculate out, very small amount of methane, huge impact, relatively short term relative to carbon dioxide. So how much carbon is going into the atmosphere? Carbon emissions continue to grow. And so over the course of, really over the course of the industrialized world, sort of the last 200, 300 years, thereabouts, carbon emissions globally have continued to grow. And part of the problem with carbon emissions is that once they're in the atmosphere, they're in the atmosphere. They have to come back out of the atmosphere in order to essentially take the blanket off. And that takes a long time. It takes a very long time under natural processes. There are ways to try to augment those natural processes, which is some of what the remediation work is. But unfortunately, I mentioned Rio, I was incorrect. It was New York prior to Paris, both in 2015, that President Robinson talked about. Rio was a couple of years earlier than that. One of the talks that I reviewed sort of had a graph of carbon emissions and indicated on this graph these different climate conferences. So the conferences have happened and the emissions keep trending upward. 2017, there was a little dip in carbon emissions, and then they caught right back up. As countries started to implement Paris, the Paris Accords that were put together in December 2015, enacted by many countries, the United States, of course, has either pulled out or not fully signed on to Paris, that the emissions did drop for a bit and then they caught right back up. So there's real question about do we have the will to actually bring emissions down? The sort of agreed on number to stay within 2 degrees of warming, which is probably actually not within reach anymore, to stay within 4 degrees of warming even, we have to get emissions down to zero, global net emissions down to zero by 2050. So the work to get there gets steeper and steeper, because you have to bring that curve down. When we talk about net emissions, we talk about, on the one hand, I'm going to guess we all drove gasoline-powered motor vehicles here this morning. So we just pumped some carbon out into the atmosphere. But our daffodils, assuming they make it through the frost, are photosynthesizing and pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. They're not doing that nearly as fast as our cars are putting it in. The thing would be to get to a world where for whatever emissions we put out into the atmosphere, we are sucking as many back in. The path to that involves first putting way less out into the atmosphere, and reducing just energy consumption overall. reducing the sort of the carbon impact of the energy that we consume through renewable energies, and then sequestration, which is removing carbon from the atmosphere. We're not on a good path for that yet, but the technology is improving by leaps and bounds. So we're getting more and more efficient. We are developing more effective renewables, and our consumption continues to just skyrocket. Our energy consumption. So again, energy consumption, forms of energy, and then sequestration, sort of in that order.
And I think that's the key, is that we keep pumping out, we keep consuming more energy. And I don't know, what have you read about this? What's your thoughts on that? You know, I mean, because, I mean, even the electric cars, that electricity has to come from someplace.
Right.
From a power plant or someplace. I've always scratched my head and wondered, now, how does that really save on CO2? I guess it must, but I don't know what the math is.
Right. So I'm not a huge expert on power generation, mm-hmm. but the ways that, for instance, an electric car can save on mm-hmm. overall CO2 output, one would be if you could generate the electricity for the electric car through renewable means. So you can't put a collector on top of your roof that collects gasoline, right? But you could put a collector on your roof that collects sunlight and turns mm-hmm. it into electricity to charge the batteries in the electric car. That's one way to get that. In that case, that would be carbon neutral, or at least substantially so. There's, of course, energy involved in producing the solar panels. There are trade-offs every step along this way, and if we get spooked by the trade-offs, we're never going to get there. But there's also just the matter of a large generator is more efficient than a small generator, generally speaking. So there is some gain to be had by, a large natural gas electrical plant. We'll leave, say, coal out of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. But a large natural gas electrical plant is going to be probably more efficient than powering your car with a tank of propane. For the same amount of fuel, you'll get more miles. But electric cars don't go all that far, right? They're getting better, right? Battery technology is improving by leaps and bounds as well. You see Teslas out on the highway, right? You don't see a lot of Nissan Leafs out on Interstate 8. Some, but not nearly as many. That's a different cost scale in terms of those cars. But you're not going to go as far in a purely electric vehicle. Maybe we shouldn't go as far.
80% of your driving is within 20 miles of home, though.
Yes, you can save a ton of energy by changing over that 80% of your driving within 20 miles of home. Yeah,
because you never leave the Des Moines area 90% of the time.
Right.
And as for that goes, Ryan takes the electric car as Bolt to Chicago and back.
Right.
And it even expands out.
Right.
One of the biggest hurdles that we have to go is things I've heard is, so for example, I'm sure if I say AOC, everybody knows who I'm talking about, came up with the Green New Deal, but then the people that go against it say, you can't make that, it's just too much of a goal, and it's too expensive, and end of story. So you have to try and convince people that this is an issue. The other thing that you find is that a lot of people are still not convinced, especially from leadership, that climate change is not an issue, that it's all made up, and we've always had weather, and it's cold today, so where's our warm climate warming?
Right.
So all of these terminology, and we get no facts. The other thing I was questioning, and not on the thing, but when you're thinking about it, is right now there is an ad on television where we're supposed to call our our people in the legislature to back what I think is Mid-American complaining about we should tax the people that are into solar.
Right.
And then I was talking to somebody who has actually had tried to do some solar using. And their comment is, we already pay money for the electric, so you can't get any straight facts anyplace.
Right. So let me sort of hit three pieces of that. And the first piece is this question of facts. What are facts, right? What do we actually know? And how do we figure out whether we know it? On the one hand, so there's a set of facts you talked about, the question of paying for the power grid when solar generation is so localized. There's got to be some really interesting sort of engineering that goes on in figuring out what's the solar grid cost and how do you fund it, right? But how do we know that just because it was 30 degrees this morning and your bulbs are all like, ugh, how do we know that global warming is in fact happening? So I'm going to quote, this is, oh, I don't have his name. A former head of the American Meteorological Society said, weather is your mood. Climate is your personality. Weather is your mood. Climate is your personality. So you can have somebody who is sort of, you know, cheerful and upbeat all the time, right? When I say they're cheerful and upbeat all the time, I don't mean that they are never unhappy, right? So there is, we're going to talk more or hear more about, okay, what do we know and how do we know it? We're going to get some of that next week. There's a really helpful, this is a, 13 pages or something, paper from the American Academy for the Advancement of Science, so a membership organization of scientists that says, here's the scientific consensus. 97% of scientists agree on these 13 pages. Without miring too deep in the details, here's what we know. That's actually what it's called, what we know. So there are facts out there. The third item is, how do we have this conversation? That's actually why I started with climate change as a human rights issue. It's a question of inequality and the way that these actions over here affect those people over there, which is part of the resistance to something like a large governmental Green New Deal, right? When we talk about, and I don't know the particulars of the Green New Deal, I have specifically not engaged with that because I want to stay, at least for this conversation, I want to stay at the level of what do we actually know. I don't know what the programs are being proposed. But there's a history in American government programs of choosing winners and losers. And historical losers have reason to suspect that any new program is going to continue choosing them as the loser. The whole sort of rush back to cool country, how do we get more coal out of the ground so that we can pay more coal miners? Now that's not going to work because coal mining companies don't want to pay the miners. They can get the coal out of the ground without nearly as many miners as they used to have. So the problem that's attempting to solve is not a solution to, but the problem that it's attempting to solve is real, which is, an economic base has disappeared. So how do we address the real inequality in the world and even in our own communities? How do we address that in a way that also recognizes the need to sustain the climate and repair the climate at this point. So that's a really, that's a really hard pair of goods to hold together. But if we don't start talking about it as a matter of justice for, the average person in Kiribati emits, or no, in Malawi, I think she said, emits about 80 kilograms of CO2, and we emit about 17.5 tons of CO2. If we don't address the way that our actions affect their ability to thrive, then if we don't begin the conversation at that level, we're going to keep arguing about whether it's happening. So next week we get that it's happening, and then we'll start talking about what to do about that.
I guess one of the things too is trying to bring it home, and this is how it affects us, in a sense. I'm not as worried about the islands. I won't say me, but people tend to not be worried as much about the island or the Pacific versus what's happening in Iowa. Because if they feel safe in Iowa, they won't have as much incentive to make the changes that are needed.
Right, and I think...
and yet, it is changing in Iowa.
Yeah, I think as we start to see more of these changes in Iowa, we're going to have a very different conversation.
I don't know if you're going to get to that or not.
We're going to talk a little bit next week about extreme event attribution. And this is new science since 2015. That we've developed really good statistical and modeling ways of figuring out there was a huge flood. I don't know if you heard about it, but the entire Mississippi or the entire Missouri River Basin flooded. And wiped out towns, right? All throughout Nebraska and western Iowa. And so the question is, what was climate change's impact on that flood? There are ways now to model that, to work out, okay, in a world without climate change, what would that weather event have looked like? In a world with climate change, what does that weather event look like? And I haven't seen calculations specifically about that. It's the math and science are new enough that we can't do this kind of on the fly, the way that they predict tornadoes on the fly. But that's advancing. I would be absolutely dumbstruck if somebody did the analysis and came to the conclusion that that was not a climate change magnified event. Lots of other factors, obviously, in that. That's part of why this science is so new, because we had to figure out how to deal with all those factors. But we're going to see more and more, I think, of these conversations specifically about how are farmers going to get by? How are small towns going to get by in a world where we don't know what any given year's climate is going to be like? So... thank you all. See you next week.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.